Hi.
Hello. How are you today? You beautiful, beautiful princess.
That's so sweet.
I'm a sweet person.
You are. Now I need to come up with an equally good compliment.
Okay.
You enchanting, enchanting ballerina.
Oh, thanks.
Look at us, a ballerina and a princess.
God.
Having a podcast instead of a critically acclaimed Netflix miniseries.
Today I would like to preface our quote-unquote cult by saying that this is not really, we're not going to outright call it a cult. We're going to present two sides of arguments and then let you decide if it's a cult or not.
All y'all at home.
Yep. It's right, like, in. It's like interactive, you know? Yep. Like a choose your own cult.
Adventure. Or choose your own cult, yes. I'm Hallie George, by the way.
And I am the other one.
Anastasia.
Who?
Serta? Is that
Serta?
It? Serta?
Actually, my name's Jorge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is Jorge Anastasia. And this is Cults of Our Lives.
Yep. And cool, for short.
Cool, as I call it on the audio files when I'm editing it.
That's what all my notes are under. Cool. I have a folder called Cool.
So if anyone came across, then I'd just be like, oh, she's looking up new ways to be nifty.
Amazing.
So tell us about what we're talking about today.
Today, we will be discussing the group Opus Dei, which is a sort of subsection of the Catholic Church.
And I, by the way, am a born and raised member of the Catholic Church, and I say this is fine to talk about.
Okay.
And if you get upset, have thou considered chilling out.
So everyone can just take a Xanax, sit back on the couch, and listen to this podcast.
Yeah, let's go. I hope you're all godless liberals who read The New Yorker and eat kale and watch foreign films. Yeah.
The at sign is free.
Yeah.
Okay, so Opus Dei. It was founded on October 2nd in 1928 in Madrid, Spain by
Jose Maria Escriva de Balaguer. And he was then 26 years old.
Yes. Originally, it was considered secular religious institution. Now, what that means, I have zero ideas.
I think that means it's a cult. Because...
But a secular religious institution...
Secular means it's not part of the church.
I thought secular just meant not religious.
Well, yeah, that's...
Yeah, but I mean...
I always thought it meant not part of, like, this... group. To be honest, all I'm thinking about is that scene from Arrested Development where Mae Whitman's character is like, teach me the way of the secular flesh.
All right. Secular means denoting attitudes, activities, or other things that have no religious or spiritual basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a religious institution with no religious or spiritual basis. So that was what it was first called. And now today...
Which is really just kind of like a club.
Maybe a god club?
A god club. That Jesus, what a guy kind of club.
That's church, though.
That is church.
Okay, so now it's considered a personal prelature, or prelature? It's a canonical structure of the Roman Catholic Church, which comprises a prelate? Oh boy. Clergy. And
this is
lady
so boring.
Who undertakes... Oh, whatever. Okay, so anyway, it's the only... Opus Dei is the only personal prelature...
Of its kind in the world.
Yeah.
It's basically like a nebulous sort of thing where it's not like being a Presbyterian or a Catholic or some sort of section underneath the umbrella of Christianity. It's like its own little bubble that's kind of floating off to the side.
Yes. So in 1939, Escriva writes... A book called The Way, which is all has like spiritual consideration.
That sounds like a cult book right there.
Right? Okay.
The Way. It's like The Secret.
So in that year, with his book being published, Opus Dei started to expand outside of Madrid. In 1936, the Spanish Civil War breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this time, Spain is being run by Francisco Franco, who has a great name.
Any relation to a James and Dave?
I think so. I think it's their grandfather.
Nice, nice. That's how they got so famous.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Escriva writes to Franco, although a stranger to any political activity, I cannot help but rejoice as a priest and a Spaniard. So he's like, okay, you're kind of cool because Franco, as the head of state, was like, he was like pro-Catholic, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But as the Spanish Civil War breaks out, the anti-clerical Republican forces... are...
That's never a good word, Republican.
Well, they're also very anti-Catholic. Yeah. So they persecute a bunch of priests. Oh my god, ready for this? They killed 13 bishops, 4,000 diocesan... Priests, 2,000 just religious guys, and 300 nuns.
300 nuns!
Fucking nuns.
How did they even find that many nuns?
So, Escriva doesn't, like, praise or criticize Franco's regime, other than, like, what we saw from that letter. But he's, like, silent the whole time.
And
like,
as we know, when you're silent, you get rewarded.
On the side of the oppressor.
Yep, looking at you, Mitt Romney.
So, his silence was often, like, misread by every... Well, it was just... interpreted differently by people all over the place as to whether or not he was in support of Franco or not. But anyway, quote, "The overall impression one gets is that Escriva strove to maintain neutrality with respect to the Franco regime, even if privately he felt some sympathy for a leader trying by his lights to be an upright Christian."
So we talked about how he himself is sort of a controversial figure. Do you want to talk about just the weirdness that goes on inside Opus Dei?
I would love to.
So Opus Dei breaks its followers into ranks and sections, which I was saying to Stassi before we recorded is always a bad sign.
Yeah, that's not usually a good thing.
When it looks like the Dance Moms pyramid.
That's actually where Abby got that from.
Exactly. She is a founding member of Opus Dei. They sort of... I'm going to go from the top down.
Okay, yeah, do it.
We have the supernumeraries. Is that how we say that?
Yeah.
The supernumeraries. They are the largest group, and they're about 70% of the total membership. And they're usually married people who have, like, careers.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, like, jobs, but, like...
are, like, successful.
Yes, who are, like, professionals. They devote a portion of their day to prayer, which sounds pretty normal. They go on retreats, which is a little bit less normal.
Ooh, yeah, I'll talk more about those.
Yeah, after that, there are the numeraries, because, obviously, they're less super. It's about 20% of the memberships. They're celibate, and they live...
Yes, those are the ones I was studying, sorry.
Yes, they live in special centers that the Opus Dei has.
Which apparently we just found out there's one near our town.
Yes, where we grew up, there's one about 5 miles away, so...
So that's fun.
That's fun to just...
Well, we can go
near.
Visit in a few weeks.
We'll go visit and do some reporting and break in and say, do you want to be on our cult podcast? If anyone has ever been in a cult, by the way, please contact us. We would love to interview you.
Or, like, almost got drafted into a cult, or, like, there's
or
one
you
from
grew
your
up
town.
In a cult.
Ooh, yes.
Yes. No, definitely tell us
any
if there's
cult
one in your
stories,
town.
Hit us up.
You know it. cultsofourlives@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
After the numeraries, because the numeraries, I guess they're sort of like the monks and the nuns of this group, almost, because they're celibate and they donate most of their time and money to the organization.
I guess so. I mean, they haven't, like, taken any vows that I know of, or at least, like, the same vows that a monk or nun would take, but, I guess so.
And then we have the numerary assistants under them.
Why are they all fucking numeric?
I don't know. It's kind of like Scientology, where everything is, like, a number, and it's all a bunch of nonsense.
We'll hit those guys up later.
Oh, yeah, if they don't kill us. No, but the numerary assistants are unmarried, celibate, female, faithful, and their jobs are to take care of the numeraries because you can't have a cult without some good old-fashioned misogyny.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And then finally, there are the associates. They are unmarried, celibate,
that
faithful.
That sounds like a thriller film.
The,
like,
associates.
The associates.
It sounds like something Ben Affleck would be in now that he does, like, dark movies.
Yeah, right? It's like that, I don't know why, it just reminded me of that film with Matt Damon where they, like, he, like, turns the knob and he, like, of the door handle and he, like, walks out, like, the opposite side of town. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
I saw it once. I have no idea what the name is.
How did I miss this? I'm disrespecting Boston.
It just sounds like The Associates.
The Associates. Yeah, The Associates are not an awesome movie starring goddamn National Treasure Matt Damon.
Who are they?
They are unmarried, celibate, faithful, who have this, I'm quoting here, typically have family or professional obligations. So they are kicked to the bottom of the line because they do things that are unrelated to the church.
Is this the top of the pyramid?
No, this is the bottom. I went in descending order. It goes...
So the pyramid is, like, upside down.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
Okay. Interesting. Continue.
They don't live in the Opus Dei centers like a lot of other people do. So yeah, those are the way they segmented everybody up. What are the beliefs of this cult?
So that's actually kind of a tricky question, because for a very, very long time, this group, mm-hmm. I'm not going to call them a cult. It's up to our faithful listeners to mm-hmm. decide that. But
looking at you, John.
John from Georgia. John, I listened to Georgia. That episode today. I was like, ah, I remember that.
You okay. Listened to our episodes?
Oh my God, yeah. I was bored. I was at work. What was I supposed to do? Listen to other people talk?
For two big flaming narcissists for that. Narcissist. An anemone. I can't talk.
Opus Dei, for a very long time, maintained, like, the utmost secrecy and privacy, which kind of...
Sounds normal.
Yeah, which really did not help their public image, I would mm-hmm. say, because people didn't know a lot about them because they were fucking... There was, like...
Hiding.
Yeah.
In so, centers.
Exactly. They're basically run-of-the-mill... Catholic organization that's really into
exclusivity. That wasn't a word. Exclusivity.
Wow, we're really on fire
I'm
today.
Sorry, I'm having some sort of mouth problem.
No, it's okay. It was like me last week. I can tell you what they practice.
Yeah.
Especially at the centers.
Yeah, the centers are the freakiest part of this group.
So the centers are kind of what drives home, like, the point that this group might be a cult.
Yeah.
Just from what we know about the centers, basically. Mm-hmm. I handpicked some of my favorite weird facts. Opus Dei members are told to have a list of 15 friends. The top, the names at the top of the list should be people with the potential that they can recruit them into Opus Dei. Because if you associate with other people, it's just
you get a $5 gift card if you recruit enough people.
I hope so. You get a vacation in the Bahamas. Yes, because if you are friends with someone who doesn't have the potential to be an Opus Dei member,
you're wasting your time.
You're wasting your motherfucking time.
They're also very into mortification, which is what it sounds like. Originally, in the Catholic Church, it meant to cause yourself discomfort or pain mm-hmm. in the name of Christ, which we noticed with a lot of cults, in a lot of extremist religions, they do that. But in Opus Dei, it means people whip themselves,
mm-hmm.
like on the back.
Yes, and they wear that thing that, like, digs into your leg or your ribs. What? Like, that, like, band. It has, like, spikes on it.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
So these people are in the center bringing lists of all their friends and are like, hey, you want to come here, whip ourselves, and then chain our legs up?
Well, here's the thing about that. That is definitely something that comes up a lot when you research Opus Dei. I went on their website because there was a link saying, like, here, look at how fucking crazy this is on their own website. But, like, that page had been removed. Like, they don't...
Wait, on their own website?
Yeah, on their own website. So I don't think that they actively, like... I don't think they force you to do it, but I also don't think... I think it's, like, encouraged. I don't think it's, like, a forced thing. I don't know. That's what they say.
This is such a boring cult.
This cult is very interesting. To me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, female Opus Dei members have to sleep on a board placed on top of their mattresses.
What?
Well, they're just their one mattress. Female members often wake up cold or uncomfortable or just can't sleep because once a week they're not supposed to sleep with a pillow. And I also believe once a month there are all-night vigils in which the members sign up to pray in the middle of the night for one-hour stretches. This is the centers.
Oh, man.
So... That sucks.
1 hour stretches of praying every night.
In the middle of the night. No, this is once a month.
Oh.
But how weird is that?
That's very strange.
Something that screams classic cult is that the numeraries surrender all control over their finances and generally do not hold their own bank accounts.
Yep.
So, oh, also, they are not allowed to keep or wear jewelry. It's all given to, the director of their center.
Oh, and I bet the director does something really good and Christian with it.
I think they keep it, like, in a vault, which they open sometimes to look at. Because, you know, that's entertaining.
Yeah.
So,
So can you explain to me the board? Why do they sleep on a board?
Because fuck women.
True.
that's literally all I got from them. Ugh. Was
why does the world hate us so much?
Because we have vaginas.
I guess so. There are more of us than there are of the other ones.
I know. We could take them over if we wanted to.
Let's do it, guys. Let's rise up.
Come on, our female friends. Let's fuck these. Let's take back our
night.
I don't know.
Anyway, okay. Well, that revolution is coming up next, but right now.
So, In Escriva's writing, it says, "You must kill yourselves for proselytism." Wow, I'm really fucking up all of the words today. I don't know any of these words. But okay, so that basically means, I don't know how to say it, but that means expanding the faith, basically. Recruiting more and more people and converting more and more
people. So your saying, individual life is worth nothing.
His point is, you should, like, die trying to convert more Catholics.
It's worth, no, that's,
Day members.
That's a thing in a lot of just Catholic stuff, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what Jehovah's Witnesses do? They walk around and, like, try and convert you.
The Jehovah's Witnesses are very interesting to me because they believe that a limited amount of people are allowed into heaven. I believe it's, like, 5,077 or something.
In a day?
No, ever. So, well, I live near a Jehovah's Witness center, and my dad would always laugh about it. He's like, well, how do they know it's not already full?
Yeah.
And, like, if you, do you
that's
bump...
That's kind of discouraging.
Yeah, do you bump somebody off the list if someone else gets sent to hell? Like,
yeah, that's actually interesting. I wonder where that
That was
from.
Just an interesting fact about Jehovah's Witnesses, which I always thought was interesting.
Nothing to do with this today.
Yeah.
For our notable craziness, some of you may remember the hit classic bestseller, Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code.
Didn't they make a movie with Tom Hanks, America's Sweetheart?
So it features Opus Dei in it, but it doesn't do, like, a very fair representation of Opus Dei.
They got upset about that.
Yeah, it was after The Da Vinci Code came out and Opus Dei was kind of slander, or just, like, it just kind of perpetuated, like, a very dark image of them.
And if people are not familiar with the Da Vinci Code, what is Opus Dei like in the
Da Vinci Code? In the Da Vinci Code, it's like this crazy, it's a cult. And it's like crazy and they're killing people and very violent. And that guy that I love plays the albino monk Silas. Oh God, what's his name? Paul Bettany. So cute.
He was in A Beautiful Mind. He was the roommate that didn't exist. Spoilers for a movie from 15 years ago.
I've never seen it.
It's a great one.
He spoiled it right for me.
Russell Crowe is very good in it. And you're like, oh, I forgot Russell Crowe used to be really good in stuff. Wait, this has just been like a random bash celebrities episode.
After Da Vinci Code came out, and I think after the film came out, Patrice de Plunkett, writer. Isn't that the worst name you've ever heard in your life?
Oh,
it's
God,
like,
you
Patrice
know.
Patrice de Plunkett.
Yeah, it just, like, it floats and then it crashes.
Like, so hard. So he sort of interviewed Opus Dei and, like, studied the group, and I got a lot of notes from him. Initially, they were kind of like, oh, we don't really want, like, you amongst us, or, like, we don't want to, like, really talk with you, but they realized, like, hey, our policy of, like, secrecy is not really doing us any favors.
It's getting us portrayed as bloodthirsty freaks.
Yeah. I mean, Opus Dei has always kind of been, like, considered, like, dark and kind of evil and kind of, like, weird since the
20s. It's got a weird Latin name.
Which means the work of God.
I did know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, after the Da Vinci Code fiasco, Opus Dei learned that transparency is key in running the organization.
With most things. Just be honest. If you're going to whip people and chain them or make them sleep on boards, just come right out and say it. I'm sure you'll find people who are into that.
You're still going to find your audience.
Yep.
You know?
You know, everyone has a niche. You know, you just got to find yours.
Yep.
And this has been business advice from Allie and Stassi. So I guess we're sort of leading into where are they now? They've become more transparent since...
Yes, since I guess the last 10 years,
yeah.
I suppose.
Which is how we know about their weird segregation of members.
Yes. So, I mean, doing the research for this group was kind of difficult because it's hard to find unbiased websites. So at one point I just kind of had to be like, I'm going to see what Opus Dei has to say. I'm going to see what the people anti-Opus Dei have to say. But I did find one interesting...
You're doing better journalism work than, like, 90% of the country right now, so...
there's a website called ODAN, which is the Opus Dei Awareness Network.
See, another cult sign, if they have a network.
Well, I think it's... this one is kind of talking about how it is a cult. So I think it's just kind of like, don't fall for it. Yeah, so it's kind of...
What say they?
Well, they said a lot. They have, like, the list of questionable practices.
Give us some of those.
Corporal mortification.
Yeah, which I
an
talked
index
about.
Of forbidden books.
An index of forbidden books?
Should I read some of
read
those?
Read some of them.
Okay, hold on. First, I have the questionable practices. We have aggressive recruitment.
Which you talked about.
Undue pressure to join, lack of informed consent and control of environment, and alienation from families. So those are all classic cult signs. Yep. List of forbidden books.
Who is the current leader?
I have that right here. It's Javier Echevarria Rodriguez.
Very nice.
So he is the current prelate. I wish I knew.
I'm with
you.
We just call everyone father.
Daddy Javier.
Ew.
Can that be?
Sounds like a porn. Hey. A porn. That hits the ear wrong. Sounds like pornography.
A porn? What are you doing? I'm watching a porn. Homosexuality and Hope. That's forbidden.
Hope is forbidden?
No, that's the name of a book.
Oh my god.
These are all in French, German, or Italian.
So I'm sorry, I just thought you meant they had banned the idea of hope. That's some notable craziness right there.
Yeah, when they signed that edict saying no more hope for anyone. Yeah, a lot of eyebrows were raised then.
So
a funny thing happened on the way of communism.
What?
I have no fucking
idea. Never heard of any of these books. I thought it was going to be like Harry Potter.
No. I mean, probably it's on here, I would imagine. The Trans-Siberian Express. How to read a book.
Uh-oh. So they just want to stop you right out of the gate.
Yeah. My Fatal Russian Woman?
That's you.
I'm translating it from the Russian.
How many languages do you speak?
From the French, excuse me. Yeah, I'm not that
Stassi's cool. A polyglot.
Polyglot.
I thought it was polyglot.
And I'm pretty sure it's glot.
I've heard people say polyglot.
I don't think that's a thing. Mice and Mendelssohn.
That just sounds anti-Semitic.
Go Saddle the Sea. Once a Spy. That sounds like a bad
James Bond. It's a James Bond porn.
Vida de Jesus, which just...
That's the life of Christ.
Yeah, so...
That's strange.
You can't read that. So there are a lot of really...
So that's where they are now. They're banning Hope, and they're banning the Trans-Siberian.
The Romance of Casanova. Okay, so as of last year, there are almost 94,000 members of the prelature.
Wow.
91,000 laypersons.
Which are, like, the people who are underneath them.
Yeah. And almost 2,100 priests.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big group, and it's, like, international as well.
Yeah.
The current headquarters is in Rome.
That makes sense.
And my last point is just a quote from a numerary Meg Cates, which says, "Members are free to come, free to go, free to participate, free not to, free to walk right out the door, free to stay."
That sounds like what you say when you have to say that.
Yeah, that sounds like something you say if it's...
Like a lawyer told you should say that.
Yeah, so,
Because there was confusion before. It's like when you see a sign that says no skateboarding by the pool and you say the reason they had to put that up is because somebody was skateboarding by the pool
or
and died.
On a hair curler that says for external use only.
God damn it. And on that note.
And on that note, bye.
No, on that note, we have to recommend stuff that enjoyed this week.
You know, I literally spent all of today trying to decide what I wanted to recommend.
Yeah.
And I still haven't really come up with anything. So you go first.
All right. Well, I got to think for a minute. I've been reading a new book, and it's called Hidden Figures. And they're making a movie based off of it that's coming out in a few weeks. It's about Katherine Johnson, who is a mathematician for NASA, and other women. They were all black women is what the book is mostly about, although there is some stuff about white women as well. And how they were the computers, because there weren't computers yet that really worked or could do the math that they needed to get the astronauts into orbit and get them to the moon and stuff. And Katherine Johnson graduated high school when she was 13.
Shit.
And graduated college when she was 18.
Holy crap.
And they made her work in the basement.
What am I doing with my life?
And they were horrible to her, and she had to use bathrooms in a different building because everyone was racist and sexist. But it is because of her that all these spaceships went up. And I'm so glad she's getting a movie. And the book itself is so interesting.
Is she still alive?
I know some of the people the
movie's based on. What's her name? Katherine Johnson?
Katherine Johnson. But it's just, it's so inspiring, especially in these times.
Yeah, she's 98 years old.
There we go.
Born August 26, 1918.
Wow.
I hope she likes her movie.
I hope she is... Who's enough to know the movie is happening.
Who's playing her? Do you know?
I believe it is Taraji P. Henson.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, she's cool.
No, so I'm looking forward to the movie. The book is great. I recommend you read it. And especially if you like space, as you know I do. So that's my recommendation.
You're an astrophile.
Ew.
An astrophile.
I know. I just don't like the word file.
Oh, fair.
The suffix file. Anyway, yeah. So that's my recommendation. Read Hidden Figures. Okay, you go.
Okay, I'm going to say that my recommendation this week is for you, the listener, after you've really chewed over this episode and decided how you fall on the cult or not cult status of mm-hmm. Opus Dei, I think you should figure out some, like, in your surrounding area, some where you can, like, see some live music and maybe go catch a concert or go see a band at a restaurant or something, because I had a amazing concert last night. It was just absolutely so fun. It was just such a great experience to sing in, and the audience had a great time, and just, I mean, live music can really do wonders on the soul. Yeah, it can really lift you up, and if you do go see some live music in your local area, and tell it's really bad, but if it's really bad, at least you'll have something to laugh about.
And then you can tell us how bad it was.
Yeah. Email us.
Email us.
cultsofourlives.com.
Nope.
cultsofourlives@gmail.com.
And rate, review, subscribe. Good looking out, guys.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. We love you.
Yeah.
We're going to scare him so bad.
He's definitely stopped listening.